Why should someone check out the Savage Street Church of Christ? I asked that in a Bible class one time, and the answer I got was, because we have the truth. Okay, but I think everyone, every church of every imaginable stripe makes that same claim. And Cliff, would you mind turning off that baptistry pump? I don't know why, but it just bothered me to hear that thing. So my question is, though, is why should the outsider be attracted to us? The person who drives down Savage Street, why should they even think about coming here sometime? As opposed to the Mormon church, which is just down the street. You know, we get confused, or people confuse the two of us all the time. I've had people show up here for weddings before, like when I was here on a Saturday, or a funeral during the week, and they wanted to know where everybody was. And I said, well, you know, what are you looking for? And figured out they were looking for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. People hear Church of Christ, and to them that sounds like the same thing. But why should people check us out? Why should they listen to us more than others? Have you ever wondered why Jesus, thank you, Cliff, and then later the apostles, why were people attracted to them? I mean, people went to them in huge numbers. Wherever Jesus went, people were flocking to him. And I think you will discover that it's because Jesus and the apostles, and later other members of the church, gave people a reason to listen. First, they went into a town and did good works. Then people wanted to know what it was they had to say. Now, with all these questions, I'm assuming that we want people to check us out. Do we really want people to check us out? I always thought it was odd in John chapter 5 that Jesus asked a man, do you really want to be made well? Well, of course he does. Well, but then again, maybe not. This man was paralyzed and he couldn't take care of himself. He had to depend upon others, and I'm guessing he got used to that. He got used to living life the way it was. Now he was going to have to make some radical changes once Jesus healed him. So I ask the same thing about us. Do we really want people checking us out? It'll mean radical changes. It will mean we have to greet visitors. And you know what? I'd say 95% of the time, we're really good in this congregation about that, and I'm delighted. Carrie and I have worshipped other places where, you know, I don't even think they even knew we were there. But I will say this, we had a visitor back here this morning who, when the services were over, everyone got up and talked to themselves and kind of let her go, and I thought, oh, please, brethren, let's talk to her. And I cut her off and held her up so that others could come and talk to her, and I noticed they finally did. Otherwise, I was the last thing, and she would have gone out without anyone talking to her. So we're going to have to make sure we talk to visitors. Also, it will mean new converts who will say and do the wrong thing sometimes. It will mean new people who will come with new ideas. We will have people who will need teaching. Are we ready to deal with those people? regardless of who they are and what their needs might be? Or should everything just stay the same? You know, we're pretty comfortable like this. We all know each other. I believe in Proverbs 14, where the Bible talks about an ox and a feeding trough, that there's great evangelism hidden in this verse. Listen to Proverbs 14 as it gives us wisdom that we might see what is required of us for people who are investigating us. Here's what it says, Proverbs 14, verse 4. Where no oxen are, the trough is clean. But much increase comes by the strength of an ox. What does the first half of that verse literally say? You can keep the trough clean if you never bring any oxen to it. However, what good is a trough if it's not used? And if used, what will happen to the trough? It will get dirty, which means work in cleaning it out. But it will fulfill its purpose. Now, what is the literal picture of the second half of the verse? If you have oxen and you use them for their intended purpose, you will have a dirty trough. You will need to clean up after the animal, and you will have a profit. Is that not the purpose of business? That's what he's talking about, their business. Well, how does this apply to the church? If we want to keep the church building clean, if we don't want new kids in here, you know, with all the noise and all the different things that they do, if we don't want to teach new converts, if we don't want different kinds of people worshiping with us, if we don't want to have to meet new people and so on, then let's not do any good works and not do any teaching. And the trough will remain clean. But will the church increase then? Will the church fulfill its purpose? No and no. So what is the church about? It's about people. And it's about bringing dirty people into the church. It's about bringing sinners into the church. I heard someone say one time that the church is not a museum of saints, but it's a hospital for sinners. Now, I know we're saints. I understand that. But it's just not a beautiful museum place where people come and look at beautiful things on display. Did you hear about that recent chimpanzee attack in the news? And how the victim was so torn up that the doctors in the emergency room, who are used to seeing pretty torn up bodies, were traumatized by it. It was so bad. And they talked about how that happens often, that although they see things like this, you know, horrible things all the time that you and I just rarely see, if ever, still they deal with some pretty bad things. Torn up bodies, blood all over the place. And that's what the church is. That's what the church is for. People whose lives are torn up and they're bloody. And they need our work. Does the world know about us? Whether for good or bad. Either way. I want you to notice the accusation against the church in Acts chapter 17. And while what is said here is negative, it nevertheless had a reputation. And that reputation made people curious about the church. Acts 17, verse 6. But when they did not find them, they dragged Stephen and some brethren to the rulers of the city, crying out, Those who have turned the world upside down have come here also. If we are turning the world upside down, let's keep doing the same thing. If we're not turning the world upside down, if we're not turning Josephine County upside down, what do we need to do to be accused of doing such? Again, in Acts chapter 28, we find out that the church became known, and again, it was a negative thing, but it created an opportunity for people to ask Paul about the church. And you know, every once in a while, the church will get in the news for something or another. Whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. But we need to use it as an opportunity to teach people. Acts 28:22 says this, "But we desire to hear from you from what you think. For concerning this sect, we know that it is spoken against everywhere." Paul, you've been traveling. Now here he is in Rome. The Jewish leaders come to him and they say, "We've heard about this sect." And of course, they're talking about us, about our brethren centuries ago. And the news reports, you can read it in the papers all the time, everything bad about this sect. But why is it growing so much, Paul? Can you tell us about it? And he used the opportunity to teach and preach about the kingdom of heaven. How does the world know what we preach, and how do they know the things that we do? What are you doing? That would attract people to the church. Okay, I'm sure you could list some things. Now, what else can you do? What is the church doing to make the church attractive? You know, an attractive force. You know, the idea of attraction, that people are drawn to us. Okay, we could list some things. Now, what else can the church do? Why in the first century did the church attract people? I'm reading a book right now called The Mission of God, an excellent book so far that as I've gone through it. And I'm going to give a quote to you, which, by the way, is on the back page of the bulletin today. And I believe this statement is true. And I'm going to give you some scriptures in a moment here to back it up. But the author, Christopher J.H. Wright, said this: "God dwelling among His people should be the most attractive force field on earth." The author didn't create this image in my mind, but the picture I got of that when I saw it was, there's the earth. I just think of literally the globe. And there's God in heaven. And at certain points on the earth, it's like a beam of His light comes down and touches the earth, and people are drawn to it. What's the connection point between God up here in heaven and the point on earth? It's the church. God dwelling among His people should be the most attractive force field on earth. Nothing on this earth should pull people more than God dwelling among His people. Now listen to some scriptures. The first three or four are from the book of Isaiah. Isaiah 45, verse 14, says this: "Thus says the Lord, the labor of Egypt and merchandise of Cush and of the Sabians, men of stature, shall come over to you, and they shall be yours. They shall walk behind you, they shall come over in chains, and they shall bow down to you. They will make supplication to you." This prophecy said further that they would be saying, "Surely God is in you, and there is no other. There is no other God. Isaiah 55, verse 5. Surely you shall call a nation you do not know, and nations who do not know you shall run to you because of the Lord your God and the Holy One of Israel, for He has glorified you. Isaiah 60, verses 1 through 3. Arise, shine, for the light is come, and the glory of the Lord is risen upon you. For behold, the darkness shall cover the earth, and deep darkness the people, but the Lord will arise over you, and His glory will be seen upon you. People will see that light in you, He said. The Gentiles shall come to your light, and kings to the brightness of your rising. Zechariah 8. If you don't know where it is, it's the second to the last book of the Old Testament. You can find Malachi, book right before that's Zechariah. Chapter 8. Listen to this prophecy in verse 23. Thus says the Lord of hosts, in those days, 10 men from every language of the nation shall grasp the sleeve of a Jewish man, saying, let us go with you, for we have heard that God is with you. Speaking of the church age. And of course, at first it was comprised of Jews, now it's comprised of Jews and Gentiles. And when people hear that God is among us, they want to be part of us. Matthew chapter 5, right in the Sermon on the Mount. Listen to Jesus speak in Matthew 5, verse 16. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and do what? Glorify not you, but your Father in heaven. Because they see His light coming down out of heaven and making contact with the earth someplace, and it's in us, the church, or us as individual Christians and how we live and what we do in life. And then 1 Corinthians chapter 14. Now 1 Corinthians 14 is dealing with the worship assembly of the church. And in this chapter, Paul deals with the possibility of outsiders, of non-Christians visiting our worship assembly. That's what the reason for much of the teaching in this chapter. But he says, if you do all things decently and in order, here's what will happen, verse 25. And thus the secrets of his heart, that's the person who's visiting you, and thus the secrets of his heart are revealed, and so falling down on his face, he will worship God and report that truly God is among you. So all these passages talk about God dwelling among His people and the attraction that it causes. I want to talk more about that a little bit later. So what did preachers and other members of the church in the first century do to draw large crowds? Was it not generally a miracle? Acts chapter 8 typifies, I believe, what we find in the Gospels and throughout the book of Acts. Philip goes, he leaves Jerusalem and goes north to Samaria. And verses 4 through 6 then say this. Therefore, those who were scattered went everywhere preaching the word. Then Philip went down to the city of Samaria and preached Christ to them. And the multitudes with one accord heeded the things spoken by Philip, hearing and seeing the miracles which he did. When did the multitudes heed the things spoken by Philip? Well, miracles got their attention. However, can someone do good works non-miraculously and get wide attention? I think so. What message did Philip preach? Well, Acts 8 shows that the truth he preached certainly attracted people. Verses 4 and 5 emphasize his preaching, but also verse 12. But when they believed Philip as he preached the things concerning the kingdom of God in the name of Jesus Christ, both men and women were baptized. People want to know what God says. I meet people like that all the time. Even people that you would think he or she's not interested, they still want to know what God says. Just like back in ancient Samaria. And so they were attracted to Philip as he spoke the truth. You'll remember in Mark 12:37 that Mark wrote that the common people heard Jesus gladly. But sometimes we assume that people don't want to hear the truth, so we think we've got to soften it up or attract them some other way, as though the truth isn't powerful enough. In Matthew chapter 7, as Jesus concluded his wonderful Sermon on the Mount, Matthew gave this commentary, Matthew 7:28-29. And so it was when Jesus had ended these sayings that the people were astonished at his teaching. For he taught them as one having authority and not as the scribes. Okay then, if we cannot perform miracles, is there anything else we can do to attract people? Brethren, I honestly believe that we have an attractive power greater than miracles. In John chapter 14, Jesus said something to his apostles, and really much of what he said in those closing chapters of John is by extension applied to us also. So what Jesus said in John 14 to his apostles and to us indicates that we would do greater works than he. I've always been amazed by this statement. Listen to what Jesus said in John 14:12. Most assuredly, I say to you, he who believes in me. Hey, that's me. That's you. The works that I do, he will do also. And greater works than these he will do. Because I go to my Father. Wow, what? We can do greater works than Jesus? In quantity. Jesus did a lot of good when he was here on the earth, as you know. And I don't know how we could ever surpass the quality of what he did, but in quantity, the church surpassed him in the first century. And the church continues to do that. 1 Corinthians, chapters 12 and 13. Explain that there is something greater than miraculous works. And do you know what it is? Let me just ask you this. What could someone do to you that would be more impressive than a miracle? If you think about it, I think you'll agree with what Paul says in 1 Corinthians 12, verse 31. After talking about miracles, He then said this, but earnestly desire the best gifts, the best gifts, and yet I show you a more excellent way. Chapter 12 is all about miraculous gifts. And he told them that they should, you know, strive for greater works. But there was something even better. And what's 1 Corinthians 13? We just heard it several times before services started tonight. It's about love. If someone came to you and did a miraculous work for you, but they could care less about you, would you be impressed? On the other hand, if your neighbor came over who could not do a miracle, but did something that you needed, that showed you love in some way, would you not be more impressed with the latter than with the former? Excuse me. I want you to note this in John chapter 6. That again, it's not so much the miraculous. There's something about miracles that their lasting power is not long. But there's something else that people are looking for. Earlier in the chapter of John 6, Jesus fed thousands of people miraculously. But you know what? In time, they weren't impressed with that anymore. So here's what he said in verse 26. Most assuredly, I say to you, you seek me not because you saw the signs, not because you were impressed with a miracle, but because you ate of the loaves and were filled. Getting free food and having their stomachs filled impressed them more than a miracle. Wow. Remember, Jesus attracted harlots, tax collectors, and sinners, the undesirable people of the land. Now here's my question for us. Do we attract them today? If God dwelling among His people should be the most attractive force field on earth and people are not flocking to us, what does that mean? And that question scares me as a Christian, as a preacher, and as a member of the church. Because in my thinking, there's only two possible answers to that. And I don't like either answer. But the first one is worse than the second one. The first one is, does that mean God is not among us? And secondly, maybe God is among us, but is there something we're doing wrong? What can we do in place of miracles? If we cannot do miracles, but we can show love, how do we do it? Take away the miraculous element, and what did Jesus and the apostles do for people? Help them when they were sick. Help them with their physical limitations. Gave people time and attention. Yes, miracles grab the attention quickly, but they fade. Love shown through good works does not instantly produce large crowds. But the effect lasts longer, and in the end, there are more people. And that's why there's a church here today. Because we have shown love. You have shown love through the decades. Miracles done all the time lose their drawing power. Love done all the time increases its drawing power. Don't ever give up on love. The simple acts of love that you can show people every day. There's probably things you do all the time that you have no idea how you impact people. When someone comes here and you welcome them and give them a friendly greeting, you may have no idea how you just cut through whatever defensive layers they may have had up and you touch their heart and it meant so much to them. You see, people do not care how much the church knows. People do not care whether the church has the truth or not until they know how much the church cares for them. And when we show people that we care for them, then they'll say, hey, what is it you want to tell me? I'll believe it. I mean, at that point, they're almost so vulnerable, they'll believe anything. And in fact, that happens all the time. Somebody in a cult or somebody who teaches false doctrine shows them love and care and gives them what they need in that regard. And they say, man, I'll believe whatever you say. And they do. But we can do the same thing and indeed give them the truth. So give the people a reason to come to us. Let us work together, not against one another, to create an attractive congregation. I'd like to end tonight with Galatians chapter 5, verses 13 through 15, that shows the power of love, but the power of not showing love as well. Here it is, Galatians 5, 13 through 15. For you, brethren, have been called to liberty. Only do not use liberty as an opportunity for the flesh, but through love, serve one another. For all the law is fulfilled in one word, even in this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. But if you bite and devour one another, beware lest you be consumed by one another. By love, we can show the world that we're the disciples of Jesus. In fact, he said that in his last night with the apostles, that by love, we could show all people that we are his disciples. On the other hand, if we bite and devour at one another, what did Paul say? We're going to consume each other. We'll kill ourselves. We'll kill the church. So we've got to see that, you know what? We're in this together. What can I do in serving my brethren to cause love to grow? Let us be of service to you tonight. We want to give you the time and attention you need. Is there something that's heavy on your heart? Is there something agonizing in your life? And you've said, wow, Don with his sermon really opened it up there saying the church would give me time and attention. And I realize I've done that. And we want to start tonight. If we can offer to you, to God, a prayer for you, or listen to you, or whatever it is, hey, we're here for you. Please come forward now to stand and sing.